Welcome to this Tech Target podcast. My name is Sandra Gitlin, and I am editor at large at Tech Target. I am here with Carla Roncato, senior analyst at ESG. Today, we will be discussing the latest in identity and access management. Welcome, Carla.
Thank you, Sandra. I'm pleased to be here.
IAM has certainly had a coming of age recently. What do you think the biggest changes have been that have contributed to its maturity?
It's been interesting. A decade ago, if you asked a large audience of 500 to 1,000 identity professionals if they'd consider moving their identity infrastructure and services to the cloud, perhaps you'd see 2 to 3 individuals raise their hands and the rest of the audience would have gasped or even laughed at the idea. A year later, 20% may raise their hands, and a year after that, 40%. And if you ask that same question today, you'd find that stat to be closer to 80%.
So what do you think some of the drivers have been?
So first, cloud computing has had a tremendous inflection point for both identity development from vendors, as well as, of course, things like advancements in mobile, web, open identity standards. And so the cloud has made distributed and scalable identity systems possible, and not only possible, but more desirable and useful. There's a higher velocity of innovation and capabilities that were previously stymied in the development of IAM suites and IGA suites. They took a really long time to build and deploy and ship and support and maintain. Mm-hmm. So the wider scale availability of things like Federated Identity, which is known as single sign-on, it came of age in a major way, and it's supported by interoperable standards as well.
You wrote in a recent blog that if companies are not talking to their customers about the concept of least privilege, they're doing them a disservice. Can you talk about how that conversation should go and why it is so important right now?
Absolutely. So perceptions changed about moving identity to the cloud. It went from being a risky proposition to one that offers better security outcomes and fewer silos, things like real-time verification and just-time access decisions, and of course, the ability to have broad, resilient work from home and work at any time. So with least privilege, it's been around as far back as 1975, if you can believe that.
Wow.
Yeah, right. I actually had to go do a little fact check on that one because I was curious how long it had been around. And it's the principle being that only the minimum necessary rights should be assigned to a subject that requests access to a resource, and it should be in effect for the shortest duration necessary and then relinquished. So it sounds like a great principle, right?
Yep.
However, regardless of what stage of technology or security maturity organizations are in today, interpreting that principle one user at a time, one resource at a time, one application at a time on some vague notion of risk and duration is extremely difficult to do. So my blog was on the heels of the presidential executive order. It's really intended as a call to action for the identity and security vendors to get very specific with their reference architectures, their configuration guidance, how to think about lifecycle management, and build into their products least privilege. So it takes that guesswork out mm-hmm. of the meaning. So it becomes a more normalized and operational way to achieve least privilege.
So, I mean, as we talk about this stuff, and, you know, it's going to depend on the advances yet to come. So what do you think those are? What are the vendors, consortiums, academia, you name it, toiling with right now that will improve IAM down the road?
So I do expect with the frameworks that exist today, like the Zero Trust frameworks and the MITRE ATT&CK frameworks, that we'll see more and more vendors essentially putting out better guidance to organizations on how they can think through their adoption roadmaps. Mm-hmm. So I think it's about guidance at this point. I think there's a lot of technology there that can already support it. So that's the good news. In terms of things that are coming that are you really benefit from these large scale identity security platforms is that there's an increased interest in verification services and technologies, and it's a scenario where it cuts across all forms of the identity scenarios and ceremonies, from enrollment through to web session termination. It includes techniques such as liveliness detection, passive biometrics, things like checking for voice and facial recognition that the person is actually there, proximity and activity and inactivity checks. So if the person has walked away from their devices, there's ways to detect mm-hmm. that through Bluetooth or near NFC or pedometers, or even doing a fingerprint check again. So these are some of the key components of Zero Trust and this concept of continuous identity verification. It's there to help combat fraud and abuse, but it's also there to ensure that you don't have anomalous behavior of a an unknown actor in your environment. So it's just as much for that threat as much as it is for detecting behaviors that might go unnoticed otherwise. So the second aspect is there's an early movement around something called decentralized identities, and that's using blockchain technology. So there's still a ton of work that needs to be done in this space. The concept here, including education and developer resources to support a wide scale scheme of this. There are a few large vendors in the space today, and there's consortiums that exist that have, you know, 60 or so vendors participating. And this is sort of in line with blockchain, thinking about it from a cryptocurrency perspective, the sort of decentralized cryptocurrency. It's the same sort of notion of decentralized identity. So that's really a long way out. But there's some value and benefits there. And in addition to the verification services I mentioned earlier, there's all sorts of vendor opportunity in that space as well.
So do you think that these will happen in the near future? Some of the stuff like the pedometers to check, you know, if you're walking away from something, is that happening, do you think, in the near term or no?
It is. There are products in market today. There are products launching every week that include these types of capabilities. They've been around for a while. This is not new. There's lots of patents on this as well. So it's been in the market for some time. It's really around the organizations being able to adopt these in a more wide scale way instead of discreetly
right.
for things like just getting into a building, for example. So instead mm-hmm. of it being sort of tied to physical access and local, it's really more about using it in a more digital reality. Mm-hmm. So all this technology is out there and available. And the tenet of the fact that these are interoperable, so they work with all sorts of systems typically. So you're not having to do a lot of infrastructure changes, which is really important here.
Of ESG's latest research on IAM, what do you think are some key points that would help listeners plan for the role IAM can play in their organization?
So ESG's research just recently substantiated that identity and access management is increasingly cloud delivered, and that 49% to consolidate around a major platform player is their likeliest strategy. So organizations are geared towards platform solutions that help mm-hmm. sort of remove the number of tools required to cover IAM, and IAM's very broad. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And some of these capabilities that we've talked about today are baked into these platforms, and that's the best solution for these organizations based on their feedback. And so whether or not organizations follow Zero Trust framework or the MITRE ATT&CK framework or any other type of security control framework for their industry, and there could be vertically specific ones for financial services and healthcare that they have an affinity towards, identities are a critical security control point for all organizations. So these are the three things I recommend. Consider identity a starting point in your Zero Trust security modernization strategy. I've talked with lots of organizations from SMB to global multinationals. They've all had successful outcomes with their identity Zero Trust programs. And that's what you kind of want to hear if you're going to embark on this, is that people have been successful before you.
Indeed.
And that's really important. This isn't exploratory. These are baked, commercially available, robust platforms. So number two, deploy multi-factor authentication. Don't wait any longer. Don't think that you have to completely upgrade your entire laptop fleet or any of those situations. You can begin the journey of breaking up with passwords and knowledge-based security systems. There are more than 100 vendors in the market to choose from. They'll have the right solution at the right price for your organization. There's no reason to delay or wait on that one aspect. And then last but not least, as you embark on a larger strategy to solving your operating model, with least privilege, evaluate those leading platforms in the market, look for them to support your least privilege goals, and certainly consider whether you need privilege access management or cloud infrastructure entitlement management or a combination of the both, because we're in a multi-cloud hybrid world. Mm-hmm. And this is the way that you'll reduce the attack surface and what is referred to as the impact radius. And that's the deal here, is you're protecting the identities, you're protecting the way in which organizations allow for those entitlements to sprawl. And if you put it, those two together, you really have done a considerable amount of work to solve that problem for your organization. The attack surface and the impact radius should a threat occur.
Thanks, Carla. This is such great information. To learn more, please check out our IAM Tech Accelerator. Thank you for joining us today.